ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Hello, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
Yes, it is. And I hear you clicking in the background. Today is Wednesday, March 13th, 2019. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today from Apothecary Herbs. But first, I want to get to the market report. So we had another good day for gold and silver. So it's a positive. I mean, it's certainly a far cry where it should be, but we're looking at New York spot price after market. We have gold up $9 at $1,311.40. Silver was up 3 pennies today at $1,554. Platinum was up $10 at $848. Palladium was up 15 at $1,559. But even though platinum was up $10, it was still a percentage-wise a bigger gain than palladium. And we talked about that yesterday. The USDX today was down 0.53 at 96.48. Crude oil had a big day today, 1.52 at 58.39. And the paper markets today, the Dow was up 148 points at 25,702. The NASDAQ was up 52 at 7,643. The S&P 2,810. Up 19 points. 10-year yield 2.61%. And European Asian markets, really no movement even after the Brexit deal, and everybody saying that the UK is falling apart and this and that. Doesn't seem to be doing that bad yet. We'll see what happens when their markets reopen tomorrow. But a lot of things going on that we're going to be talking about, and I think one of the most interesting ones is Boeing, and with what they're happening, and I guess even President Trump came out and grounded the airline's MAX 8 and 9 planes. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on the program, and I want to welcome Wendy Wilson to the program, and she's here with us every Wednesday, and we're so glad that she is here sharing with us information on how to stay healthy. Hello, Wendy.
Oh, hello, Melanie. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Wendy.
Happy hump day to everybody.
Not you too.
Yeah. Well, hey, the standards in medicine for measuring hypertension have changed. It was in the news recently. Also, how they re-engineer flu viruses now has also had a change. So I thought we'd talk about these two things. Okay. You know, because we all just got used to the standards regarding, you know, what constitutes high blood pressure, hypertension, and that was kind of established in the 70s, you know, and the guidelines now have been lowered. The threshold has been lowered, so we're going to talk about that, and also the aggressive advancements in pathogen research and a lot of vaccine development, new laws on that. But let's get to the blood pressure change. Now, in November 2017, the Harvard Health published an article on the elevated blood pressure numbers. And their report was stated by the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association. They released some new guidelines. Now, it was 114 pages in their report, and it first hit the medical schools, and now it's just now trickling on down to getting into real life for you and me. So, you know, on Monday you may have heard, hey, normal blood pressure is 140 over 90, but now they've lowered they've moved the field goals, let's put it that way, and the new normal is 120 over 80. So if you're above that, you're hypotensive. Okay?
Mm-hmm. What is that number again?
120 over 80. If you're above that, they say you need blood pressure meds.
Wow.
I'm wondering, you know, when they're going to move it to 100 over 60, then, you know, everybody in America would be on blood pressure meds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. According to the new protocols they put out, when treating hypertension, patients are supposed to wear a digital monitor all the time and record their blood pressure readings, and depending on the monitor, some of them will transmit wirelessly your hypertension readings to your doctor. Now, this is supposed to address the issue of marked hypertension or white coat hypertension. Have you guys heard about that?
I don't think I have.
Well, what it refers to is your blood pressure gets temporarily elevated for, you know, many reasons. Like maybe you just had a cup of coffee or you had an energy drink, or maybe you're coming down with an infection, or you just get nervous when you go to the doctor and it elevates your blood pressure, but it then comes back down later. So the monitors are supposed to let doctors know, hey, your patient probably just has a white coat hypertension, a little nervous, doesn't need drugs, you know? But I don't know how many people are going to want to wear monitors, you know what I mean?
Yeah, really.
Well, there's a little history to hypertension. In the modern era, the treatment and cause of hypertension kind of been educated guesses, really, or maybe just an excuse to sell treatments. And here are some quotes that reflect this point. This is a quote from the National Library of Medicine Institute of Health, and it was an article called Timeline of History for Hypertension. It was published in 2016, and it said, quote, throughout the 60s, the debate continued in the medical community regarding if the need existed to treat different varieties of hypertension called essential hypertension, which thought to be unavoidable and brought on with age. Attempts to treat hypertension with the few drugs available often caused more misery and earlier demise for patients than leaving them untreated, end of quote. Ha ha.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the drugs caused them to die earlier. And here's a quote from the Archives of Internal Medicine. This was back in 1965. The quote was, one needs only to look back at the past 50 years to be amazed and deeply concerned at the worldwide enthusiasm generated by many proposed therapies for hypertension, which eventually meets their derived doom and oblivion, end of quote. And this one was from Dr. John Hay. He was a professor of medicine at Liverpool University, UK. In 1931, he said this. This I find very point on. He says, there is some truth in the saying that, quote, the greatest danger to a man with high blood pressure lies in its discovery, because then some fool is certain to try to reduce it, end of quote. All right. Now, hey, who's making all the changes to hypertension and other things in medicine? You ever wonder who makes the rules?
Who makes the rules, Wendy?
I know. What person or persons make the call on, hey, it's time to lower the blood pressure threshold and also the demands for treatment? According to a report in the American Medical Association, there is a group of physicians referred to as the world physician leaders who set all the medical standards. And these physicians are part of an organization called World Medical Association. So we're told that it is, you know, to protect patients, secure quality of medical care, standardize everything. So the very first place these changes are activated are usually in medical schools with the junior physicians that are just entering the workforce. Got to bring the newbies up to speed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the World Medical Association also decides what latest technology is going to be used in medicine, and institutions that don't go along with their agenda risk their funding, accreditation, and recognition from the World Federation of Medical Education. And there is a coordinated world effort to standardize medical treatments, and some of the core principles being used to prepare physicians are learn to work in teams and use big data or artificial intelligence. Those are the two big ones right now.
Wow.
I know. So this agenda is reaching 32 medical schools and over 19,000 students, or about one-fifth of the up-and-coming physicians in the United States. Well, let's shift gears and let's talk about the flu virus, because engineering the flu virus, I've been talking about this for a while, but I've written lots of articles about it. Not all science agrees, though. Not all scientists agree with taking benign diseases and then turning them into global pandemic ones. So in the 2011 publication of The Scientists, they were actually warning that this is what was happening and was going to put human life at risk. So at the time, the National Science Advisory Board of Biosecurity was investigating research groups that were attempting to re-engineer the bird flu, H5N1, and make it highly contagious among humans. So after 5 forced mutations later, the scientists were able to infect other mammals with this virus that was only meant for birds. So the public's never going to hear this on the news or in your local papers, because when scientists achieve their ultimate goal, the public's going to hear that some animal virus mutated on its own over thousands of years to now infect humans. So the edited or re-engineered bird flu actually got presented at the September European Scientific Working Group on Influenza in Malta. And here's what Dr. Thomas Ingleby, who attended that conference, he's a director at the Center of Biosecurity, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. He says this: it's just a bad idea for scientists to take an animal virus and turn it into a lethal and highly contagious virus, end of quote. I agree, Doc. I really do.
Yeah. I mean,
well, now we're going
to
jump.
Took a lot of education in colleges to figure that one out.
Well, we're going to jump to 2019 because that was 2011 there. And what we've just learned is the National Institutes of Health have gone ahead and given approval for scientists to now genetically modify influenza viruses. So they've lifted this ban that scientists weren't supposed to conduct such experiments to force mutations or re-engineer viruses. So this is despite warnings of other scientists that they have voiced a real threat on this type of work, that it could cause massive deaths. You might want to ask me, what was the compelling reason the National Institute of Health took into consideration to lift the ban?
What is that compelling reason, Wendy?
The scientists that want to do this research said this: we need to study viruses to protect human health and learn more about them to better prepare for a pandemic, end of quote. And that was it.
Well, you know what? I always thought, I don't know, but, you know, in today's world, to where we travel here and there and everywhere with the poor quality of food and our diets and our immune systems and so forth, to me, I'm really surprised that we haven't had some sort of pandemic as yet, you know, too.
Well,
and I think that's just got to be
right.
Not that far away.
Yeah, it's not. And, you know, it's kind of late in the coming, according to some specialists. They thought it'd be in here, you know, 5 years ago. But here's a quote from Dr. Steven Salzberg. He is a professor of biomedical engineering at Johns Hopkins University in Maryland. He says this: I cannot fathom why the U.S. National Institutes of Health have permitted the dangerous research and allowing this to happen. Re-engineering the flu to be more virulent is a terrible idea and has the potential to cause millions of deaths. And I know of two scientists that have spent years trying to mutate the avian bird flu to spread between humans. One of the deadliest strains of avian flu circulating is the H5N1, and as it's been able to infect humans, and it will be deadlier than the regular human influenza. This strain is not able to be transmitted from human to another until these two scientists, Ron Foucher of the Netherlands and Yoshihiro Kawaka of the University of Wisconsin, re-engineered the virus to gain that ability, end of quote. They did it on purpose, with intent. So what could have convinced the National Institutes of Health to lift the ban? Well, it wasn't the hundreds of signatures scientists around the world put on a letterhead to them declaring that this research is unwarranted and offered unprecedented risk. Not only were these scientists ignored, but the National Institute of Health now setting rules for funding for this type of research. So we got some mad scientists out there re-engineering. So apparently they want to put re-engineered H5N1 bird flu in your universal flu vaccine.
What could go wrong?
Well, Dr. Salzberg says the notion that anyone can predict a future pandemic strain so precisely that we could design a vaccine based on prediction is laughable. So what Salzberg just confirmed is that pandemics in which a vaccine is ready to be used would be a deliberate hoax or a pandemic that was deliberately started. So some scientists project that virulent strains could kill up to 20% or 100 million people. The most dangerous strains of influenza have the A strain in them, and they're learning to change the surface of the virus with amino acids and proteins to turn it into something it's not. Dr. Michael Vahey, professor of School of Engineering, Applied Science, Washington University, St. Louis, and this was in the journal Cell, November 9, 2018, he says, we have the ability to label individual viruses, We can quantify how much of each protein they have per particle and what size the particle is. It is possible for a virulent animal flu virus with a high number of A strain to successfully attach to a human cell, creating new ways to make humans miserable with the flu. End of quote. Really? They're just in your face with it.
They are, aren't they?
Well, I'm just fed up with it, to be honest. This is what I do. I investigate things. I look for options. I pray about it because prayer is a real important aspect to making sound decisions. And I also trust God's advice that he gives us in the Holy Scriptures, because when God promises, he delivers. And when he says it will happen, it will come about. And there's really no chance it won't. So when God says herbs are here for health, well-being, and healing, well, that's what he means. And you have at least three major declarations of that fact from Genesis to Revelation. So that's what you call a witness. And therefore, it's established, you know, can't be undone. So when God establishes something, the matter is settled. And there's very few treatments scientific medicine relies on God's medicinal herbs for. And when God's herbs are used with wisdom, we don't have side effects. We don't have overdoses. But when we operate outside those bounds, that's when we get into trouble.
It's very true. So very nicely said.
You need to, you know, just use herbs, boost your immune system. There are herbs that have these inhibitors, like to Ebola, tuberculosis, all kinds of things. So you're not left defenseless is the point. Okay? You have tools. You know, learn to use them. Sometimes it's all about the tools, right?
Absolutely. And I know you have the right tools.
Right. We got a ton of things. We even have pandemic kits. So check us out at Apothecary Herbs. Give us a call toll free 866-229-3663. That's toll free 866-229-3663. ThePowerHerbs.com. Check us out there. If you have questions.
What is in your pandemic kit?
We've got 8 different things that you can use separately or together for certain. There's a master sheet to show you how to use them. And there's even 2 products in there that you can reverse a vaccine if you were forced to get, let's say, a vaccine for a pandemic for any reason. So a lot of people have to get vaccines, you know, to keep children in school, to keep their jobs. So it's becoming a forced issue. So it's real important to know how to reverse those.
All right. Sounds like a great little kit. How much does one of those go for?
We do have it in a couple of sizes there, Melanie. Depends if you want the regular or if you want the super size. So, and you can get a refill as well. So basically you're looking at $220.
That's really not a bad price considering what it really does and how all shelf your medications.
Life. Yeah. Yeah, shelf life is 10 years.
Give her a call, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Wendy. We'll be back here in just a few short minutes.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter, and we do have a special today, $665, and it is a $25 face value. We got the 90% silver back for you. Didn't really go away, but did go away for specials on the program for a while. $25 face value. These are 50-cent pieces, 90% silver. And, of course, we also are going to include not a 10th ounce, but a quarter ounce, a one-quarter ounce American Gold Eagle. And that price is $665. If you purchase two of these packages, we'll include free shipping for you. So $665, buy two or more. If you want 100 of these, we have them for you. So they're readily available, 90% silver, 50-cent pieces, and that's $25 face value and a quarter ounce American Gold Eagle for $665. Give us a call, 800-375-4188. Well, Dave, I guess the government is happy. According to the government, it seems like the economy is just rolling along, right?
Yay! Booming.
We've got some. First, we're going to talk about the wholesale prices. U.S. wholesale prices barely increased last month after falling for three straight months. Again, there's a sign there's supposedly no inflation pressure in the economy. They say the PPI, the Producer Price Index, and that measures price changes before they actually reach you, the consumer, rose 0.1% in February, and it did slip 0.1% in January, so we're even. If you exclude, we must exclude that volatile food and energy costs, core producer prices also rose 0.1%, wholesale prices increased almost 2% from a year earlier, 1.9%, and the core price rose 2.5%. So the CBI, the Consumer Price Index, we talked about it just briefly, released yesterday, increased just 1.5% in February from a year ago, Dave.
That's what they say anyway. In addition, orders for U.S. factories for big-ticket manufactured goods edged up slightly in January, too. The strength seemingly came from a big increase in the volatile aircraft category. Quite ironic, given the grounding of the Boeing MAX 8s and 9s in Europe and now the U.S. An encouraging news for future growth, I guess. A key category that tracks business investment plans posted its biggest gain in 6 months. Now, that again, the orders for durable goods rose 0.4% in January. That was led by roughly 16% rise in orders for commercial aircraft. The category that serves as a proxy for business investment rose 0.8% after 2 months of decline. It was also the biggest gain since a 1.5% bump in July of last year. The weakness in business investment has puzzled economists, who expected to see strength in this area as companies boosted investment spending to take advantage of new tax breaks.
Well, you know, now that they've been putting a hold on rates, the Federal Reserve, we've seen the mortgage interest rates, that they are decidedly lower than a year ago. And home shoppers are buying in, but most are wealthier consumers purchasing more expensive homes. The total mortgage application volume did rise 2.3% last week from the previous week, but volume was essentially flat compared with the same week 1 year ago. Falling rates were likely behind a sizable jump in loan applications to purchase a home, and they rose 4% for the week and 2% higher than a year ago. Buyers last year were up against the high home prices and rising rates that actually pushed the affordability down, combined with a severe scarcity of entry-level homes for sale that put the housing market kind of in a deep freeze. So with rates falling at the end of the year, did help affordability, but apparently only for some, Dave.
Yeah, well, the average loan size, Melody, jumped to a record $326,000. That's well above the nation's median home value, which, according to the National Association of Realtors, was $247,000 in January. Now, the average contract interest rate for 30-year fixed mortgages with conforming loan balances of $484,350 or less decreased, it looks like, 13 basis points to 4.64% last week. I beg your pardon. That was the decrease from 1 year ago when it stood at 4.77. It was actually down 3 basis points from the week before, which had been 4.67. Applications to refinance a home loan decreased 0.2% for the week, and we're 4.4% lower than a year ago, Melody.
Well, that is interesting. That means people are feeling like they got a little more money in their pocket to see the loan jump to to a record $326,000. So you can view that as good news, and you can also view it as, here we go again.
The debt, the personal debt level just continues to soar.
Here we go again, ladies and gentlemen. How many of them qualified for that? And how many of those is subprime? And how many of those, with all the addition of the increased debt that we've been talking about, the credit card debt and everything else, it's, you know, so here we go. Here are the signs. Who's paying attention to the signs? Not very many people out there in the regular world, but unless they were listening to programs like this. Last week, the Labor Department reported that the unemployment rate fell to 3.8% in February. You don't hear anybody talking about there was only 20,000 jobs created. You know, it's just like, oh, we're not going to talk about that report, but we're talking about the unemployment rate, again, 3.8% in February. But a broader measurement says that the jobless rate actually dropped to 7.3% last month. 3.8% is known as U3. The U3 rate is defined as total unemployed as a percent of the civilian labor force. But the number they like to use is but this number doesn't include the underemployed or the discouraged. And the U6 rate is more, it is more of a number that counts discouraged workers who aren't currently looking for jobs as well as those holding part-time for economic reasons. So they often say that the U6 rate is the real unemployment number, Dave.
Yeah, that dropped to 7.3 from 8.1% in January, Melody. Now, on what I guess you could say is the positive side of things, that's the lowest reading of the five most recent reports, U6, that is. On the other hand, 7.3 is almost double the 3.8 reported by the government and therefore most media outlets. And the 3.8 figure is highly misleading. You know, the number of those employed part-time for economic reasons did fall by 837,000 to 4.3 million, while those completing temporary jobs fell by almost a quarter of a million. Labor Department officials said that was a consequence of the government shutdown that ended in February. And as Melody said, you know, February, we saw job growth coming nearly to a halt with just 20,000 non-farm payrolls increasing that month, falling way short of the 180,000 that had been expected by the economists. And our man David Stockman, who we've been talking about off and on since September of 2017, he's not wavering from his bearish outlook that he's been warning us about since then. You know, not even a 20% rebound off of December's paper market low is changing his bearish prognosis for the paper markets. You know, Stockman, who served as President Reagan's Director of Office of Management and Budget, suggests fundamentals are not driving the 2019 rally. That sounds a lot like what Melody Cedarstrom has been saying on this program, ladies and gentlemen. Stockman said yesterday, this is just day traders, chart monkeys, robo-machines. This has nothing to do with rationality or investment analysis on any reasonable time basis. Now, this is a subject in Stockman's new book called Peak Trump, The Undrainable Swamp and the Fantasy of MAGA. He adds, we hit peak Trump and peak market at 2940 on the S&P back in September. I think that's going to be the peak for a long time to come, questioning Trump's having embraced the stock market as his barometer for economic success. Stockman sees the S&P plunging to 1600 or lower, representing a more than 40% drop from current levels.
You know, it's kind of nice to see, you know, I mean, he's been warning for years. I mean, we talk about it for years. It takes time for this stuff to process through. We see all the signs, as he does. I mean, a couple of years ago, he says that there was going to be a horrendous storm that was going to hit stocks. We did too. He says it never happened. Last year, he called it a daredevil market. And he says we've got headwinds coming from all over the world, in which we talk about all the time. He says, as you can see in the export data and the European economy and the big troubles going on in China, and you can even see it in our own data, which has been really weak. He emphasizes the record budget deficit as an unnerving headwind. He says it's a huge risk. It means it's actually crazy time that this market in Washington both ends. And it's everything is being totally ignored. We're heading into this financial crisis in the 2020s when the entire baby boomers are retiring and a Social Security and Medicare are soaring that we won't come out of. That's the big elephant in the room. I mean, what are you going to do with all these baby boomers that are retiring, you know, betting on their retirement accounts, their pension plans, and those that don't have anything at all? I mean, what happens when Social Security, we're seeing that these programs are being cut in the budget, they're being cut trillions of dollars. They know, DC knows these programs have to be cut. What do you think is going to happen when these senior citizens or retirees lose 70% of the money that they were planning on to retire on? Well, how do you think they're going to react? I wouldn't think very, very nicely. Not to the politicians, Dave.
Senior citizens vote in higher numbers than any other age class, Melody. So that tells me that somehow, somewhere, sometime, members of Congress and whomever's sitting in the White House are going to find some kind of solution because everybody wants their vote. And insofar as this isn't just a financial or economic issue, it's a political issue, I have a feeling that politics will win out the day.
I wonder when, what year that actually reverses. Because you have the baby boomers, and I mean, they're actually going, you know.
I believe it's within the next 10 years. I forget the exact time, but it's actually... There will come a point in time in the nearer future that money coming into the trust funds will not pay all of the benefits going out that same year. And that's within the next 10 years. I mean, well in advance of that, Congress and the president are going to have to make the difficult decision. Are they going to cut benefits for either, you know, current retirees or for some class of future retirees? Or are they going to, find a way to ramp up, create new revenues, which, you know, who knows? They could take the form of higher payroll taxes, which are going to be, you know, highly unpopular, especially among the millennials. Or will it be some combination thereof? There certainly is not a shortage of viable proposals that have been out there, for a number of years. It's just a matter of whether there's going to be the political will/courage, you know, to get it done. And it certainly won't get done before 2020. And then, you know, who knows what happens after that? We've gotten, you know, two of our major institutions, Melody, that are just between a rock and a hard place that they themselves have created. And we've talked about before about, how things aren't going to change the way they need to until some of the underlying problems are addressed head on. Campaign finances, you know, when are we going to create a system where our elected leaders, I mean, literally with no shame, have to go over to their party headquarters and 4 hours a day, four hours out of every 8 hour day, they're calling donors.
Yep.
And who do you think?
Or being interviewed on TV.
There you go. I mean, who do you think they're beholden to?
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, I thought it was interesting, you know, one of Stockman's other comments, and then we'll move on, is that, you know, look, we're at the top of the business cycle, time when there shouldn't be any or almost no budget deficits. And he thinks, you know, we've got a problem of unhinged central banking. And we have a Washington that has been euthanized by cheap yields on the debt. And they can pretend you can borrow $4 trillion and live to tell about it. So he says he thinks that's laughable. And, White House Deputy Press Secretary Lindsay Walters said, you know, more people are employed today than previously were. More jobs are remaining on our shores. President's budget calls for economic policies that drive down the deficit and continue to bring prosperity to all Americans.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, you can't have... He doesn't understand fiat currencies because you'll always have a deficit. Anyway, we're heading into a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trade. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, $665, $25 face value, 90% silver, 50 cent pieces, and a quarter ounce, 1/4, 1/4 ounce American Gold Eagle, $665. Buy two packages, you get free shipping. Give us a call, 800-375-4188. We're just going to touch on this briefly. I guess, where did I want to go? I guess the House isn't going to vote on a Senate bill to Pelosi said the House is not going to take up the Senate GOP bill to give political cover, Republicans political cover, as they vote on whether to block President Trump's national emergency declaration. I thought they were supposed to do that today. They're going to vote tomorrow.
Well, no, they're separate. It depends. I mean, this provision to water down presidential emergency powers by essentially requiring the Senate to approve an extension every 30 days, that's either going to be part of, in lieu of taking up the House bill, which does not have that particular provision. It's just, a rejection of the president's, emergency declaration. Or this could be in addition, separate from the rejection of Trump's national emergency declaration. So it's a little unclear what form that's going to take. But Mike Lee of Utah proposed this plan yesterday. In Pelosi's words, to give Republicans cover, especially those between 4 and 10 reportedly that are going to vote against Trump on the southern border emergency. And that Lee is proposing, national emergencies would have to, would end after 30 days unless Congress extended it. Now, Lee's proposal doesn't apply to Trump's declaration. It would just be in the future. And of course, that would take away one of the Democrats' louder warnings that, if Trump can do it for this, the Democratic president can do it for guns and whatever, other causes.
Who cares about the Constitution, right?
What?
Nobody. Yeah. Oh, remember? Remember that thing?
There's some recollection. I think I saw it in a distant relatives.
I think that's what irritates me most about all of these politicians. I don't care what side or who they are. You never hear anyone even mention the Constitution in their daily work, business, and so forth. And that alone shows you exactly.
In some ways, I think they shouldn't have to, that it ought to be a given. It ought to be just a fundamental driver, a fundamental assumption that drives their decision-making their decisions and the processes they use to arrive at them.
Yeah, but
the case.
But they prove to us, though, by their decisions and by their comments, that they don't. And you're right. They swear an oath to uphold the Constitution. So yeah, you would think that they wouldn't have to. But look at their decisions and look at the things that they say and the battle that's going on. And I'll guarantee you they're not sticking to the oath that they took. So, yeah, to hear it once in a while would be a little bit more, you know, just...
Maybe, maybe they, as, you know, with their, when they gavel in every session, that is every day they're in session, maybe they ought to, as a group, recite their constitutional oath.
They should.
Every day.
Every day.
That would be
kind of bring them back to earth a little bit.
A helpful reminder.
Yes.
Yeah, hey. Speaking of constitutions, I was fascinated by this story about Amazon. Now, on the one hand, I saw an interview today where presidential hopeful Elizabeth Warren had been talking about breaking up these big tech companies. And then I read another article about Amazon, one of those so-called FANG companies, lobbied more federal agencies than any other company last year. You want to get into that at all?
Yeah. They lobbied more federal entities last year than any other public U.S. company, and pressing its case throughout the government at a time when its power and reach is under the magnifying glass. And it truly is. This online retailer is now a behemoth. It touches healthcare, cloud computing, media, the transportation sector. The regulatory challenges it faces are just as complex. They even do, I'm sure Bezos does, government contracts also.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, tons. In its filing last year, Amazon disclosed lobbying 40 different federal entities on 21 different general issue areas. And
that's amazing.
It really is.
You know, every quarter, Amazon has to file a form listing every federal entity it contacted on different issues. That's all public companies. That form shows 518 different disclosures made by Amazon last year across those four different quarters. You know, Amazon advocates on a host of traditional tech and telecom issues like net neutrality and data breach standards.
You know, we know they've been locked in a battle with the competitors over a Pentagon cloud computing contract. But its lobbying records also show a company with interest in regulatory fights around food, drugs, transportation. And we used to worry about Walmart. Remember that, ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, my
word. In the 90s, it was Walmart. Now it's Amazon. But they had Amazon had lobbied last year on self-driving cars, drone issues, a sign of its investments in autonomous delivery of customers' packages. They're a growing player in the grocery business. So Amazon lobbied on a forthcoming pilot program to allow online grocers to participate in a supplemental nutritional assistance program, food stamps, as well as on the standard of labeling bioengineered food. One observer noted that Amazon looks like a giant squid with many arms busy reconfiguring nearly every corner of our economy and our laws. And this is one reason monopoly power is a problem. And so these giant corporations inevitably govern us. I mean, but they've been doing it for a while, but I guess they're just a little bigger now and maybe a little bit more in our face. And, you know, it truly should be the other way around. And
crazy stuff.
But let's see, where else do we want to go? We got about 6 minutes left of the program. This sounds like this is a pet peeve for you, Dave. I kind of took it on a funnier note. I looked at it as there's a lot of money involved in here, and in this on your brevity is golden. And it's about the these college, I don't know,
cheats.
But there's but there's cheats everywhere. But this is just, you know. So go ahead.
Hey,
and
it's okay until you get caught. You know, Operation Varsity Blues. You know, the topic, privilege. Melody, elitist, wealthy, privilege.
It's kind of funny.
You know, hey, it is, and then it isn't. You know, co-star of the TV series Full House, Lori Loughlin, former head of financial firm PIMCO, they're due to face criminal charges related to a $25 million scheme to help their wealthy families, friends, clients secure places for their children in top colleges. You know, the two I just mentioned are among 50 people charged, I think, by the Boston U.S. attorney for taking part in the largest scam in U.S. history, this kind of scam, you know, which steered students into elite universities like Yale, Georgetown, and Stanford by cheating the admissions process. You know, Loughlin was taken into custody in L.A. this morning, PIMCO CEO Doug Hodge, due to be arraigned in Boston. You know, there's another parent who was charged, Manuel Henriquez. He resigned as CEO of Hercules Capital. It's a big finance company, yeah. I believe, in Delaware. You know, the mastermind of this scheme, Rick Singer, pleaded guilty yesterday to racketeering charges. Prosecutors in the Boston U.S. Attorney's Office said his company, Edge College and Career Network, amassed $25 million through this fraud. Singer got caught and ended up cooperating with investigators last year, you know, wore a wire, helped the feds record incriminating conversations he had. The elaborate scheme. Now, this is where, I mean, you got to laugh at this, or you're going to, like, you want to strangle somebody. You know, it involved bribing the administrators of college entrance tests to allow a child's wrong answers to be corrected, and bribing university athletic coaches to attest the child was gifted, even if he or she was anything but. Now, I guess it's a pet peeve with me because I have a special needs daughter who struggled throughout her schooling days, including college, with a learning disability. And, you know, to see these wealthy, entitled parents, you know, just subverting the system to this extent just really makes me want to laugh at them that they got caught. You know, Singer apparently helped doctor photographs to make a child appear athletic. Parents made their payments to a sham charity that he ran, you know, also allowed them to make a fraudulent tax write-off.
That's where they get in trouble, the tax write-off.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they're after.
Yeah. Now, Loughlin, you know, the TV star, is accused of paying Singer $500,000 to help cheat her daughter's way into USC, both of her daughters, by bribing crew coaches at the school to pretend the girls were gifted rowers. Apparently, neither of them is. So, you know, Felicity Huffman, who starred in Desperate Housewives, husband of William Macy, who's stars as Frank Gallagher on Shameless. There are a number of others, but they're among the most famous. You know, I think nothing else needs to be said about this disgusting display of leading foolishly by example, Melody.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, people that have wealth and funds, I mean, this goes on all the time everywhere. I mean, so it does kind of...
It makes it all the worse.
It kind of surprises me.
They do it because they can.
Well, but it kind of surprises me, the number. But I mean... there's far worse things going on in our colleges across this country than, you know, parents cheating and stealing to get their kids. I mean, if your kid, you know, doesn't qualify to get into the big colleges, I mean, I get that part and so forth. I mean, I don't know who's dumber, the kid or the parent, you know, trying to get them, because once you're in there, they still have to go through school and still earn the grades and so forth and actually graduate. But I mean, some of the things that they teach in these colleges anymore, the programs that they have, to me, that is more disturbing than wealthy kids trying. Because, I mean, it happens everywhere. We've seen it with, you know, wealthy people keeping their children out of out of the Army, out of the services. You know, I mean, we can see it with our president. You know, he supposedly he had a thing there, but come on, everybody knows the Bushes and everything else. I mean, this is what this is what they do, and we probably do the same. I hate to say it, would we? Or I shouldn't say we would. My question is, would we? You know, if you had, you know, more money than, you know, oodles and oodles of money, would you help your child get into a college? Not by cheating, but maybe by, you know, paying someone to get in there. I don't know.
Same thing. That's just a form of cheating. I mean, whether it's through bribery, whether it's, you know, having someone, you know, fake that they're your son or daughter and sit in on the, you know, SATs, you know, whether they're accepted and you pay a fraternity brother or a sorority sister $100 a week or a month to do all your papers, you know, and sit in the big lecture halls to take your midterms and finals. You know,
I mean, I'm not condoning cheating or anything like that. I didn't want it to sound like that, but
look, I agree. It's not nuclear weaponry, nuclear war, nuclear disarmament. The whole scheme of things, you know, it's not way up there, but it still bugs me.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what bugs me is we're out of time.
Darn.
I know it, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back tomorrow, so remember our special, $665. Give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. Single penny left for me. That's too bad.